position primarily is in this case is this is not under the what do they call it? The residual clause.
Yeah.
This is under the definition of what a crime of violence is. And the Supreme Court in Taylor and the Supreme Court in Johnson both indicate that for the purposes of definitions that you use federal law. It said the courts in both of those, the Supreme Court in both of those opinions states that we use the categorical approach regardless of how the cases were labeled by state law. And of course, in the Taylor case, you were dealing with the definition of burglary, which had been in the 84 ACCA, and then it was changed during the 86 Act. But it says that we always want to have something, the whole United States, we don't want it to be dependent upon state laws. And Utah makes any escape from custody a felony. Now, then that differs from many other states where a misdemeanor arrest and escape on foot would be a misdemeanor, and thus the maximum punishment up to a year in jail under 18 U.S.C. 751. We suggest that under the Taylor and the Johnson definitions, or it says the definition should not be labeled by state law. We argue that also the penalty should not be decided by state law. You can have different penalties throughout the different states, and it's always clear that under a federal statute, you're not supposed to let the various states define the federal statute.
Well, Mr. Greenhall, you cite in your brief our Hughes case from 2010, and it is under this same statute. It is the residual clause, and it is an escape. Can you speak to the application of that opinion to your client's sentence?
And which one is that?
Hughes.
Well, Hughes dealt with a felony where the man escaped from the Missouri State Prison. It's completely different from our situation.
But it does set out the rules that we're supposed to follow. We're supposed to look, we can look at, it seems to me, the indictment to determine whether this was the kind of escape that would fit within the violent felony clause. Can you address the evidence that we have that is usable in determining whether this is an applicable conviction?
Yes, Your Honor, under the records excerpt on page 35 of the records excerpt, we have the judgment, restitution judgment, and sentence in commitment from Utah. There it shows that he was charged with six or seven different offenses: reckless driving, a misdemeanor; speeding, a misdemeanor; driving while license suspended, a misdemeanor; open container. And all of that is from the judgment and the information that was filed. And that's what Shepard says we can look at. That's how come we can tell that this case is only an arrest from a misdemeanor. And under the precedent of Hughes, we go and look at those records, and it shows clearly that Mr. Helmick was arrested. He was also arrested for theft in there, and we can see that his theft, he stole some handcuffs. Now, then, I believe we all know that stealing handcuffs after you've been arrested for speeding, it's more than likely that those handcuffs were behind his back. And I think we can draw a logical conclusion. That categorical approach means that him having handcuffs is not going to mean he's less violent because of a misdemeanor arrest. The categorical approach precludes me from bringing that up. But still, the categorical approach, when you have more than one offense, and there are several different offenses of escape, you have... And just like Hughes said, and Justice Jolly said in Hughes, we're not deciding whether or not the other violations under 751 are crimes of violence. They only decided in that panel that escape from an institution was. We say the same principles apply, that you look at the conduct or the based upon the judgment, restitution, or the judgment, and this says restitution judgment. He was also ordered to pay $40 to Trooper Dunlap in this judgment. I don't really understand that. But it was a misdemeanor arrest.
Yeah.
And he took off with handcuffs, stole those handcuffs. That was a misdemeanor theft.
Mr. Greenhall, you seem to imply that we can parse out different violations of escape. And I guess the question is, why do you say that? Escape is escape. In Hughes, this statement, every escape scenario is a powder keg. Why don't you focus on that and tell me why escape is not an escape. That is to say that for punishment purposes, not all escapes are created equal as a categorical matter. That to me is the essence of this case. And when Mr. Gay comes up here, he has the inverse of that question.
Well,
why not?
Because of 18 U.S.C. Section 751. 751 specifically says that the maximum punishment for escape from an arrest without a conviction is up to 1 year in jail. And up to 1 year in jail is not a violent felony by definition of the subsection E of 922.
Mr. Greenhall, I agree with you that he was charged with misdemeanor crimes in association with this particular escape, which Utah categorized as a felony, okay? But all the rest were misdemeanors. Now, he escapes. He doesn't escape with a vehicle, so, the Harriman cases can be distinguished. He doesn't escape from a county detention center, so Hughes can, in some respects, be distinguished on those facts. Nonetheless, if we look at escape, that is that you're fleeing from legal custody, and what that means is you're fleeing from some individual who has the authority, the legal authority, to keep you in custody. Now, why is it that this type of escape is any different in its danger of rearresting and affecting the safety of both the public and the arresting officer?
We would have to be going to the residual clause to include it before it gets to be a crime of violence under the statute. If the maximum punishment is only up to 1 year in jail, it cannot be a crime of violence. And that's just because of Congress. If we were to go to the residual clause, then we would be talking about similarly to what they talked about in Chambers.
What I'm suggesting to you, Mr. Greenhall, is whether you escape from conduct that can be labeled a misdemeanor as opposed to a felony, the serious potential of risk of physical injury to another is probably still the same.
Well, it very well may be. I know that in the Chambers case, I read the oral argument in Chambers, and they went to the sentencing guideline, and it talked about how many arrests had been done in 2006 to 2008. They used the sentencing guidelines, this report on escapes, to say that the failure to report would not be as serious a crime. But even if it had the same risk of danger, the statute doesn't apply because of the definition.
You're leaving me, counsel. I thought the Utah statute provided that this escape was punishable by 5 years in prison.
Yes, sir, it is. But I'm saying that Taylor and Johnson, and it goes back to the 1954 case of Turley, it says that in the absence of plain indication of an intent to incorporate diverse state laws into a federal criminal statute, the meaning of federal statute should not depend on state law. And I would suggest that whether it's a label or punishment, it would be the same thing. We don't let the states decide what is going to be the punishment for federal statutes.
Yeah, but you're also arguing that because this is a misdemeanor arrest, that we should label this as something other than a crime that could lead to serious risk of physical injury.
I'm just saying that the statute of the Armed Career Criminal Act,
yes,
it specifically says that violent felony means any crime punishable by imprisonment for a term exceeding 1 year, that, and then it has the others. So if it doesn't exceed 1 year, now, and I'm saying that we have to look to the federal law so that it is uniform throughout the United States and not let someone like Mr. Helmick, who was arrested in Utah, if he had been arrested in Texas, misdemeanor, we wouldn't even be here because they would not have included it. And that's where the injustice we get into. In the Taylor case, they go through the legislative history for about 8 or 10 pages, which Justice Scalia, he concurred in opinion, but he did not think it was necessary to go into legislative history. They talked in the legislative history in Taylor, and they quote Turley, that it's...
You've applied this category, Taylor law, to the punishment. Well, that's a new one on me. What's the best authority you have for that?
Well, whenever they
make it out of Taylor, you've got to help me more to be more specific with this.
Well, Taylor dealt with the definition of burglary.
I know what that case is.
and by the definition, you got to the punishment. It seems to me it's the same here. If we allow the Armed Career Criminal Act to depend on what a state says a punishment over a year is violent, then you have people that are being subjected to this just because of where they were arrested, and that's unequal protection, naturally.
Well, but we have to look at the escape, it seems to me, in this case, not the misdemeanor speeding or the misdemeanor, you know, having an open container in the vehicle. And in that case, then it seems to me that in this particular case, it was categorized a felony, and therefore it's serious.
Well,
I mean, using your argument, it seems to me, though, Ms. Greenhall, that what we have to look at is escape. And you need to, I'm not, you know, we have these cases, the Hughes case, we have the County Detention Center, we have the Harriman case, where, and both of these were considered within the residual clause. And then the other case was an escape with a vehicle, okay? As part of the, now, what is it about this escape that takes us out of the residual clause?
Well, we don't ever get to the residual clause, is what I'm saying, because it's prefaced with the definition of violent felony being over 1 year. And I know that Utah statute was over 1 year. I'm just suggesting that under Johnson...
We should use state law.
No, I'm saying that we should use federal law, Section 751, to make it uniform throughout the United States. That's what Johnson says. Johnson specifically says that we do not pay attention to the definition of the state. we use, it specifically said in Johnson, Justice Scalia, he specifically stated that that we decide these cases upon federal law, not upon the definition of state law. And that's all I am suggesting. It says that the meaning of physical force the government would seek to import into the definition of violent felony is that they started back in common law with burglary and used a generic term. And so I'm saying the same thing. You should have a generic assault. You have felony assault and misdemeanor assaults. And in Hughes, it specifically recognizes that misdemeanor assaults are not part of the statute.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Greenwald. Mr. Gay.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'd like to begin by saying that we apply the modified categorical approach under Chambers in determining whether this escape from custody would be a crime of violence under the Armed Career Criminal Act.
Do we have to decide whether any escape in order to sustain this would fit that from official custody, would fit the armed criminal statute?
We believe that what you have to have is a circumstance where you have purposeful, violent, and aggressive behavior as a function of the escape. So escapes where the individual is in the presence of a law enforcement officer would likely be detected at the time of the escape, or in situations where a pursuit would likely occur, all demonstrate the sort of purposeful, violent, and aggressive behavior that Chambers contemplates.
Well, what do we know under the modified categorical approach materials that we can use about this escape?
We know that he is in the presence, he is under official restraint, escape from custody of the officer. Excuse me one moment, I'll grab the statute. So that we can make sure. Escape and basically, official custody means arrest, so we know that he is under the restraint of a law enforcement official, whether with or without a warrant, or confinement in a state prison, jail or institution, or confinement pursuant to an order of the court or sentenced and committed, and the sentence has not been terminated, that sort of thing. And so we know, based upon this definition, that this particular crime would fall within the definition of what would be a crime of violence, because all of these scenarios indicate that you would have a situation of purposeful, violent, and aggressive behavior that Chambers contemplated.
That's 7B of the Utah statute.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Insofar as the statute, you quoted the statute. In the count in the information, it seems to me there's no further explanation. Would you agree as to what Helmick did? It says escape from custody, third-degree felony, defendant on a certain date, escape from official custody of a Utah highway patrolman in violation of that statute. So really, that doesn't tell us any more about what Helmick did than the statute does on a modified categorical approach. Would you agree?
We're not required to focus on the actual we're looking at the elements of the offense.
Right, and you're saying the elements are enough.
Absolutely.
To find it sufficient.
Absolutely, Your Honor. In fact, we would be mistaken, I believe, to actually start parsing the facts when we have the statute as defined. We don't ever even get to that point because the elements control. And so when you look at the generic contemporary definition of what constitutes an escape from custody, it's clear here that we don't have a situation where we have, for example, a walkaway escape, which the government, of course, concedes is not a crime of violence.
Or failure to report.
Or failure to report, or circumstances such as where you would not have, post-Begay in Chambers, the purposeful, violent, and aggressive situation as part of the offense.
Yeah. You know, theoretically, let's just talk generally. If someone escapes, it seems to me there are two points of possible conflict. The first one is the escape itself.
Okay? Absolutely.
That is to say, if you leave from a detention center or a prison or from custody, okay? That's the first point. The second point is when an officer goes to rearrest. Escape has both those points, it seems to me. Okay? And both those points are dangerous points. There's that great line in the old book Texas Ranger where in the introduction he says the danger point is when the escapee knows that he can get away and the officer knows that he can get away, and the danger is they will both use violent force at that singular time. And the question then is, who gives in or who doesn't give in, or they both don't give in? And of course, that's the danger point in their arrest. And of course, the same can be applied to that point where someone decides, I'm going to flee.
Absolutely. That's the whole powder keg definition explanation that's in use. And I had made notes, and trying to parse this, whether there's a vehicle or not a vehicle, I think is also not really critical, because once the defendant and of course we're talking here about purposeful, intentional conduct, not reckless, not negligence, you know, for example, in DWI cases, that sort of thing. But once that purposeful demonstration of the unwillingness to submit to the lawful authority of the officer is there, then the powder keg definition, it comes to light immediately, because then you're in a situation where the officer does not know to what lengths the defendant will seek to continue the escape. And the defendant, of course, is in a situation where the officer, likewise, can escalate to effectuate the pursuit and capture. And so you have a situation. And so what we're looking for under Chambers and Begay is a purposeful, violent, and aggressive conduct, and a substantial risk that those things will occur as part of the offense.
Well, that's true, but it seems to me we know so little about how Helmick affected his escape from the materials we can use. It seems to me we have to conclude, which I think is your argument, that so long as he is in custody, an escape from custody is always going to fit the definition.
I believe categorically it does, Your Honor. In fact, it's interesting, but on page 692 of Chambers, they were talking about how walkaway escape, they say, the behavior that likely underlies a failure to report would seem less likely to involve a risk of physical harm than the less passive, more aggressive behavior underlying an escape from custody. That's from Chambers itself on page 692. The Supreme Court itself recognized that an escape from custody is not what they were talking about. They were talking about someone who just simply fails to come back, walks out the front door, is not being supervised.
So then the focal point is the initial escape, not the rearrest.
Absolutely. I think that all of it, however, together does form.
The reason I say that is because in the scenario where somebody just doesn't report, sooner or later, some marshal is going to go out and rearrest this man.
It's quite, yes.
And so you have the danger at rearrest, and you have the danger at the point of escape. You got those two points, it seems to me. Now, in this case here, I think we have to focus on we don't have to say about rearrest. We have to focus on the point of escape and whether or not under this particular statute where someone is in custody, whether that's sufficient for the purposes of the ACCA.
And that's exactly what I think we have here. We have a statute and applying, and I have to say that if you read the sentencing transcript, Judge Janelle does perhaps the best discussion of a modified categorical approach analysis that I've seen in quite some time in reading a sentencing transcript. He actually goes through and explains, I think, quite coherently why he believes that this offense fits the definition. And what we have here is, and it's very, it's a very confusing area of the law, to say the least. And Begay and Chambers, by creating some ambiguity, I suppose, as to the contours, because we started having to relook at, for example, previously walkaway escapes, DWI, many things had been determined to be crimes of violence under the residual clause. Now we're saying that it has to be of a like kind to the enumerated offenses there, and that's what Chambers and Begay talks about. And so we have to focus on, are we willing to say, or can we categorically say, I think is more precise, that this offense involves purposeful, violent, and aggressive conduct, the substantial risk of those things. And that's exactly what I believe that we have. And so whether we do not need to know, for example, we don't know whether Helmick was in a vehicle or not in a vehicle. We don't know whether he resisted. We simply have to look at the elements and applying the categorical approach the government believes and the district court found that the Utah crime of escape from custody is a crime of violence under the Armed Career Criminal Act.
Okay. What is the significance, we can all, the ramifications of basically saying this is enough, and how far would that reach? It does seem to me that factually, some escapes can be quite nonviolent and do not create a large risk of violence. You talk about walkaway escapes. I'm not exactly sure when that definition applies and when it doesn't. Are you saying regardless of what might be in the record of a plea colloquy, perhaps, or something else that is usable on a modified categorical approach, that any escape from custody is going to suffice?
I believe that where you have a situation and that you have the likelihood of an officer being present, the escape being detected at the moment it occurs, and the likelihood of an immediate pursuit, all of those things demonstrate the contours of what would constitute, under the residual clause, a substantial risk. And so, to answer your question, this court can look to additional items to determine the substantial risk question. However, applying it in this case, we do not have to get to that point because the definition of the offense is limited to those circumstances where someone is either under arrest of the officer, in his custody and control, and escapes from official custody, or in a detention center. And so those two definitions would, I believe, in every case, constitute a substantial risk of purposeful, violent, and aggressive behavior. And that's how I think I would answer.
Thank you, Mr. Gay.
Thank you, Mr. Gay. Mr. Greenhall.
Well, under the government's analysis, let's say Hughes, if he had been arrested not for escape from an institution, but if he had been arrested in the same circumstance by a federal officer as Mr. Helmick was for a misdemeanor arrest, then it would have been a maximum punishment of up to 1 year. And if the maximum punishment is up to 1 year, it cannot be a violent crime under the Armed Career Criminal Act because of the definition of the statute. I know that Judge Reveley and Judge Garza, y'all were both on the Carbajal-Diaz case at 508 Fed 3rd 804. Y'all said that we should rely on a uniform definition regardless of the labels employed by the various state criminal cases, or by the various state criminal code. I would say that definition and punishment should be interchanged. We should not let the states define an act or set punishment different than 751. Under 751, a misdemeanor arrest, and if you're not convicted, there's the two. You have to have an arrest without a conviction, that any escape after a misdemeanor arrest without a conviction is a maximum penalty of up to 1 year. Anytime you have that limitation, then you can't have an Armed Career Criminal Act violent offense. The Turley case years and years ago in 54 that was cited by Hughes, it says that on federal acts, we're just not going to let the states define what is or is not. Judge Scalia in the Johnson case specifically says that we will let the states, they can tell us what they mean by their statute, but they cannot define what under the residual clause, the state cannot define what a violent felony is, that is a federal matter, and we have a federal definition, and the generic in the Taylor case, and so what the state defines the punishment, we would say, is the same as whenever the cases say that the definition. And we think those could be interchangeable because we're dealing with punishments under a definition. And we think that the fact that Utah makes a misdemeanor arrest a felony should not apply because of Section 751, where a misdemeanor arrest would only be up to 1 year in jail.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Mr. Helmick was very fortunate. He had a very good counsel in this case.
Thank you very much.
We appreciate your service.
Well, I appreciate it very much. I'm the second lawyer. He didn't like the first one very good. You know, that happens oftentimes in these court appointments.
Mr. Helmick, you know, you are a court appointed, and you know, the court wants to thank you. You know, without people like you to defend clients like your client, the system just breaks down. And it's greatly appreciated by the court.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.